thank goodness we're so able to see for ourselves what's going on in the world because of cameras. Or are we? As a new chilling documentary unspools the world of surveillance cameras, we see that despite having them on our cell phones, police officers, drones, and just about every street corner, we as humans might still see what we're looking for. We have blind spots. For instance, body cams don't look backwards at the officers. Body camera videos make everything seem threatening. And we learn as we tour Axon, the company that makes most of them, they could have been designed with infrared to later show if a suspect had a gun, but that wouldn't have shown what the officers saw in the moment, which is all that's admissible in court. And the spokesperson for Axon tells filmmakers he thinks police just wearing cameras makes people behave better.
Look at the effect it's having on me right now. I dressed up. I'm more professional. I'm not cursing right now. Why? I'm being professional. I know I'm being recorded. Your cameraman is being very professional too. Why? He's recording me. We both have jobs to do. The officer has a job to do. He wants to be professional. So at the end,
Axon also makes the taser, and filmmaker Theo Anthony reminds us early moving picture cameras were made from weapons like the rifle. You pulled the trigger and filmed. So is the camera a weapon? Residents of an all-black neighborhood in Baltimore think so, as a private aerial surveillance company tries to convince them to allow planes, first used in wartime, to fly over their town looking for criminals. The film is all light everywhere, and director Theo Anthony joins us. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Robin. This is really an honor.
There's so much information here. You point out we literally do have blind spots. The optic nerve at the back of the eye that connects to the brain can't see. It is a blind spot. The camera can distort reality. It leaves a lot of reality out of the very frame that you see, and you hint at that in your style of filmmaking. We see you setting up a shot or coaching subjects as if to wink at us and say, see, I'm manipulating this, what you're about to see. And then you take us back and forth in time, including attempts, early attempts, to film the transit of Venus across the sun. What were you saying there?
Yeah, I mean, I think even before that, I think that there's just always, I was always surprised that the camera was the least talked about thing in the room. It seemed like the most obvious object that was so obviously shaping conversations and the power dynamics, who was in front of a camera, who was behind the camera. You know, there's lots of moments we could look at in history. We really zeroed in on this moment, the transit of Venus, which is this astronomical event where Venus crosses the face of the sun. And if you can measure that from different points on the Earth, you can establish the solar parallax, which is a really key number for determining global positioning and navigation systems that are still used today. But the interesting thing with that was that for every one person who tried to record that event, there was a different recording of it. So even then, people were bumping into the limitations of the observer and how the act of observing in itself obscured the observation.
Okay, so let me ask you, on the part of the listener who might be thinking it, you know, surveillance cameras on a downtown store in Boston got a photo of the Boston Marathon bombers, led to their, well, at least one capture. There's the George Floyd trial. The consensus is without cameras, there's no way Derek Chauvin would have been convicted of murder. You know, your film, you know, we see cameras in a sinister light, but isn't there a benefit?
That kind of obscures the fact that these modes of surveillance are creeping into more and more areas of our everyday life. They're in our shopping cart transactions. They're in job interviews where they're assessing the emotion of the interviewee. And we use crime as a way to sort of justify this further intrusion. And it kind of covers up the larger movement that's happening. And with regards to the George Floyd murder, you know, I think it's really important to point out that it wasn't body camera evidence that brought out this one incident to the world. It was the video taken on a cell phone of someone at the scene of the crime. There was actually not a body camera footage that was responsible for bringing images of that brutal murder to the world. And so when we look at the ways in which body cameras are sold to the public, that they will supposedly bring accountability and transparency to policing, I think it's really important to understand that very often it's used for the exact opposite, actually to disprove the civilian perspective and the civilian account of things.
Well, you take us to a class for officers who are training to use the body cams. We see some eye rolling from the officers at first, but then the instructor shows them a video, a body cam video, in which a suspect clearly lies. He says the officer involved hit him when the officer didn't. And the police in the class react. they say, you know, wow, you know, people need to see this. Now they're suddenly on board with the body cam because they're shown video showing that it'll back up their version of events. And the instructor says, yeah, cameras don't take sides.
Show what actions each side takes. That includes us and them. Everyone else that we deal with. Anyone who's not the police wearing the camera, it shows what actions they took. And then it shows subsequently what action we took in response to it. So, cameras don't take sides. Just remember that. They're the all-seeing eye. They're just going to remember whatever they see, and they're going to play it back for everyone else to see. Right?
I think that's a very convenient stance to have when that perspective that doesn't take sides 9 times out of 10 backs up your own perspective, you know? And that goes down to the very camera design, which way it points, how much it records, how much it doesn't record. Just speaking to, you know, very particularly to what you mentioned about what the camera sees and what it doesn't see, you know, a camera is not meant to see everything. And that's because of the way that use of force works in our country. When you're looking at whether use of force was justified or not, you're looking at whether they had enough information at the time to justify a use of force. So by not visualizing the entire image, you're actually giving more leeway to the police officer and always skewing towards their perspective.
Well, again, there are people at Axon and officers who would and do say in your film, this is about saving lives. Both the body cam and the taser, which Axon makes, are about saving lives. But what's further disturbing to many, what happens to body cam video?
Yeah, no, I think, I think what happens to those videos is it's not just a camera. The cameras, you know, Axon doesn't just sell a body camera. They sell an entire software management suite that's kind of like a Dropbox for police officers where you plug the camera in and it automatically gets uploaded to their cloud. So what you're looking at is an entire image factory that is controlled and operated by the police officer. They control the capture of it, they control the storage, and they control the distribution.
Well, also at this website, evidence.com, they feed the body cam videos into AI, artificial intelligence, to analyze them, compare them, put them in algorithms. And here you make a chilling comparison to Charles Darwin's time. His half-cousin, Francis Galton, came up with the idea of using composite photography, meshing together several faces to come up with, as he said, not a criminal, but a man who might become a criminal. So there's this sense that this database is a database of potential criminals when maybe they're not.
Yeah, I mean, I think this idea of cataloging and ordering the world as a means of controlling the world is something that's a very old story. And I think that when you look at it in this light, in the way in which these videos are controlled through evidence.com and their distribution, and there's little to no policy on how that video comes to public, you really see a means to sort of control the image.
Yeah. Well, so much of this is told in your film in a very removed, dispassionate way. Then suddenly it explodes on the screen when a group of Black community activists in Baltimore meets with Ross McNutt. He's the CEO of an aerial surveillance company. He's trying to convince them to agree to let the city allow his planes to constantly monitor, fly over their neighborhoods with their cameras to detect crime. We'll first hear from the lone activist who says we have to do something. He wants these planes.
This is not the city. This is not Baltimore Police Department.
Right.
This is a whole private entity that wants to assist Baltimore. That's it. Just want to help.
Many of the activists are adamantly opposed.
To tell me that in order for me to solve crime, I must give up all my rights so that crimes can be solved. That's a false premise. That's a false hope. And that's what you're asking these folks to do.
It turns out that Ross McNutt won the city contract. That's to your point, Theo Anthony, the surveillance that we're under. But then, you know, just dwell for a second on, I'm not quite sure who said it historically in your film, but the eye only sees in each thing that for which it looks, and it only looks for that which it already has an idea. Your narrator goes further on that and says, if you're looking for crime in a Black neighborhood, you're going to find crime in a Black neighborhood. You're just looking in that neighborhood. If you'd looked in another, you might have found a different kind of crime through a different surveillance. Just your sense of that phrase, the eye only sees in each thing that for which it looks, and only looks for that for which it already has an idea.
I find that quote really chilling because it seems like it could speak so easily to the conversations around the bias in AI and algorithmic, you know, policing and, you know, the idea of garbage data in, garbage data out. You know, when you have policing practices that are driven by algorithms that point police officers to heavily policed areas, you have to stop and ask, well, where are they getting that data? And that data is coming from previous policing activity. And if that policing activity is based along racial or economic lines, then you just have a self-reinforcing cycle of criminalization and enforcement of that criminalization. And we see that in the war on drugs. We see that, you know, in the war on terror, you know, in our own borders. And I think that in all of my work, I'm always looking for these phrases or these connections that feel like they could come from any moment in time. And over the course of the 5 years that I spent making this film, we were really surprised to find lots of these connections.
Yeah. That's Theo Anthony, director of the new documentary All Light Everywhere, about surveillance cameras and their impact on our lives now and then. Theo, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.